Independent journalism needs protection, now more than ever. Leaving a gift to TPR in your will helps ensure thoughtful, fact-based news has a future in Texas. Learn more at tpr.org/legacy.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Immigrant detention centers in the U.S. are not isolated to the border. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement lists 131 centers online, covering at least 38 states, two U.S. territories, and Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. Hundreds more facilities act as detention centers across the country, including hotels, hospitals, and jails. As of November 16th, around 65,000 people were being held in ICE detention. These often massive detention centers are regularly located in smaller communities. The populations of the detention centers sometimes come close to matching the town's own population. These centers serve as economic boons to these communities, but they also leave an environmental footprint. The centers are brightly lit at all hours, impacting the dark skies so often prized by rural towns. Photographer Marnie Schindelman is capturing light pollution at 45 private ICE detention centers. Schindelman's project is called Restore the Night Sky. It's a way to reflect the impact of the immigration crisis on the rural landscape. She explains that her fascination lies with tying the ephemeral to the real by tracing the vast data network we amass and leave behind.
Well, it means a lot of things. But the first, is that we leave data everywhere we go. We leave it on our houses when we turn on our lights. We leave data when I go from my house to work, when I go from my house anywhere else. So as a photographer and an artist, I've always tried to kind of make that visible, make just us think about what we leave and the tracks we leave in places, because I work in real sites, so photographic sites.
So what are some examples of that before we talk about this project?
Yeah. So I did a longtime project with my collaborator, Nate Larson, who's in Baltimore, where we photographed the sites where tweets were made from for years. Our most recent project, which kind of ended this 15-year project, was we photographed all the sites of tweets that had the hashtag Thanks Putin for this. We were in St. Petersburg and Moscow in 2016. And then we photographed the sister cities as Obama was leaving office, which was L.A. and Chicago. And we photographed those with hashtag Thanks Obama. We think all these things are ephemeral and live in the data universe, but there are real sites. You know, someone stood on this site and thought this kind of thought, or, sent this tweet, or X, as we would call it now.
So you would sort of pinpoint those areas where those tweets were sent. And so what were some of the more interesting locations that you were sent in those cities?
Oh. I really enjoyed the newer project. It's called Geolocation, but the one from Russia. I mean, we were in a garbage dump in the middle of St. Petersburg, nowhere. We've been to, where else? We've just been really the nondescript sites are the more exciting ones, or make the best images. You think the most grandest sites, but it's just someone standing on the side of a sidewalk who's, tweeting something tragic, or someone lost their job. And those are the ones that kind of resonate most with me.
Well, let's talk about this current project about sort of tracking this night sky. It's called Restoring the Night Sky, and it has to do with detention centers. There's one about an hour's drive southwest of us here in San Antonio, and I think that's the one that inspired this particular project. So can you give us the origin story about that?
So I, at my university, I get to be a student. We have a form of sabbatical. So I went to the geography department, and the first day I was a really good student. I had my backpack. I went to the first day graduate student meeting. And mind you, I have no history of being a geography student, but I went and I heard the graduate students were giving what I did this summer. So I heard someone speak, and it's my friend Leanne Purdom, who now is a faculty at Drake University in Iowa. And she spoke, she said, I can't show any photographs of what I did this summer, but this is near what I did. And she showed a photograph, just this nondescript ranch house. And she had worked at what was then called the South Texas Residential Center. It was the ICE Detention Center for Families. And that was the summer that we saw the news kind of explode, where we were separating children from their families. and Leanne did pro bono law work for them. She'd done it for 5 years before, and she's done it for 5 years since. So we began a friendship, and she said, you can see detention. It's everywhere. She's like, you can see it. You know, I live inland, not far, very far from borders. And Leanne's like, you can see it in town. You just have to know what to look for. And that kind of struck me really deeply that, you know, I could be able to tell what was going on and that my community was also implicated when it seems so far from the border. So that winter, she said, oh, come to Dilley, which is the town you're speaking of, about an hour south of San Antonio. So I made it to Dilley. And my goal was to not go in the detention center. I wanted to see what a layperson could see. And I wanted to see what we miss, what I as kind of a white person misses and don't know what's going on across this landscape. You know, as we talked about, like, I love ephemeral data or linking data down to an actual site. I wanted to see what I couldn't see. And so I spent all week with these incredible volunteers. We also spent time in San Antonio at the bus station. There's so many good people in your town doing really hard work every day. But one of the things we did one night, they made me climb on the roof of the house where all the volunteers lived. And they were like, we want to show you the detention center at night, not even probably a quarter mile out. So we stood, we watched the sunset. And my friend asked me to take a photograph of his favorite tree. So I turn around and all of a sudden I see this line across the entire city, or city in quotes, really rural area, where you could see the detention center. You know, these high power LED lights were just reflecting across the entire landscape. And so the project really came from that one night and that evening and that whole trip of, you know, working and living with these. Originally, I thought the project would be about the volunteers and the people that were really fighting, you know, every single day. So that's where the project came. And from there, I started photographing. I'm trying to get all of the detention centers, the private detention centers, which are most complicated for me.
So you didn't take a picture of the detention center itself. Why is that?
There's been questionable moments. I will tell you, the police definitely don't like it and make you delete it. But these are federal detention centers. So I turned my back to them and that became the project. And the whole point, as I was saying, was to see what I could see. Like, what could I see without looking directly at it? And with that summer, we saw some really sensationalized images of children being torn from their parents that were heartbreaking and terrible. But we've become really desensitized to these types of images. So I wanted to have images you might linger on longer and that didn't maybe exploit people, or that were a story, my story of what I can see, as opposed to the story that one news reporter might see who's out at night.
And I think what most people would see immediately, even just by looking at your photos, is just how pervasive this light pollution is. And these rural areas, I'm sure, pride themselves on their dark skies. But then that's offset by the promise of potential economic prosperity that these detention centers could bring. So how were you able to weigh that and portray that in your photos?
Well, that's the project kind of folds in amongst itself in many ways. And they're extremely remote towns. And so I use every photograph is titled by the capacity of the detention center and the population of the town, which sometimes are as close as 1 to 4, you know, so only 4 times the number of people live in these towns as are in detention. And the truth of the matter is that these have not given a lot of prosperity to these towns. It's not given a lot of jobs. It's giving just straight direct money into the budget for towns. So for instance, the town by me, Lumpkin, Georgia, gets 20% of its annual budget for infrastructure from detainees, from privatized prisons, from the privatized ICE detention center specifically. And then a lot of the people are being imported to work in these jobs. They need upper level management people mainly for the jobs and skilled laborers. So it's not even the promise of these kind of economic booms isn't happening in these towns.
I think maybe people who are not familiar with detention centers, you know, for so long it was thought that, you know, people would be apprehended at the border and they'd be sent to detention centers at the border. But as your photos detail, these are areas that are established far inland. You've got, like you mentioned, in Georgia, in Louisiana, in New Mexico, not just in Texas. So tell us a little bit how you were able to find and to visit these sites, because it had to have cost a bit of money to be able to do that. So how are you able to fund a lot of that travel and maybe find a place to stay? Because it's got to be really difficult to sort of figure out all of the fine-tuning behind these extended projects.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say I've hit over half. The biggest swath I have left to do is middle Texas. I've done west and east, and they're mostly funded by grants. I'm applying constantly for grants, and any sales of the work go directly to kind of funding me to complete this project. On today's to-do list is to finish another grant to hopefully get some money to go out. So I go out, I travel as cheap as I can. It's a very strange way of traveling. You're traveling for nighttime mainly. So I wait all day, and sometimes the heat of these towns, in towns that there isn't very much to do. I always take someone, kind of a spotter. It's usually my partner, and he comes with me, and he, you know, helps me keep safe at night. When you go photographing, you kind of lose yourself. And so he helps me, you know, make sure I'm staying safe when I'm doing things.
Marnie Schindelman is a professor of photography and expanded media at the University of Georgia. Her current project, Restore the Night Sky, explores light pollution caused by private ICE detention facilities. When we come back, the landscape photos in Restore the Night Sky could be misconstrued as simply beautiful shots of star-streaked skies and illuminated tree lines.
And it is a bit of a lure of beauty. That's what I want, you know, to tell this story is I want to lure people in and then really have them sit and think about what we're doing in our country.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for this podcast of Fronteras comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. By investing in local communities and rewarding policyholders for prioritizing safety, they are building a more resilient Texas. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. A photo of a brightly lit desert mountainside clearly illuminates its layered strata and the spiky sotols and prickly pears that dot the landscape. The background, a starry night sky. Upon first glance, the illumination could be caused by a brightly lit business adjacent to the small mountain or a nearby football stadium. The culprit is actually the West Texas Detention Facility in Sierra Blanca in far west Texas. The photo's caption details the year the photo was taken, 2024, the population of the town, 544, and the population capacity of the center, 450, almost the population of the community itself. It's one of a series of photos Marnie Schindelman has taken of landscapes that border private ICE detention facilities across the country. The landscapes vary from barren or mountainous desert to grassy plains to pine forests to people's backyards. Schindelman purposefully chooses to photograph the effect of the structures instead of the structures themselves. She uses long exposures to get the desired effect.
So the long exposure, you might see some motion. You'll always see the stars moving. So you'll see the stars kind of look like, instead of a dot, they look like an elongated point. My exposures are around 30 seconds, so 30 seconds to 1 minute. So I kind of stand there. I almost call it an act of witnessing. You know, I have to be quiet. I'm at night. I'm on public property. Everything is legal that I'm doing. But, you know, there is still, when we're at the border or when we're near federal detention centers, there's always suspicion of people. You know, you have the cops sometimes called on you, but what I'm doing is legal. And that's kind of my role. And that's how I look at this work, because it is my role to witness this and to tell the general public what we're doing.
Let's talk about some of these photos, because these are, if you don't know what the context of the picture is, you think, wow, that's a really gorgeous photo of a tree or of a pond or an open landscape that has this beautiful contrast of light against darkness, or maybe, oh, that looks like a sunrise, or perhaps, oh, it looks like there's a storm in the back while the sun is shining. But that's all sort of this, not really a trick, but it's kind of how you want people to sort of take another look and another thought at what is really portrayed in these photos. So since this is radio, we can't really, you know, show the pictures. We can direct people to our website to see more. But can you describe some of those photos for our listeners?
Yeah, I'll describe. I'm actually looking right now. One of my new favorite ones is West Texas Detention Facility in Sierra Blanca, which is about an hour away from El Paso. And you see the image and you see this crazy light. Someone once described it as there being a rave, or if you might be standing outside of a large football stadium on a Friday night, you know, where that light is so bright and it's so white. But there's always a key in the photograph. Generally, like in this photo I'm looking at, it's this beautiful mountain that is being lit, and it's actually just catching all the light from the detention center behind me. But you see a mountain in the distance, it's pitch black, and that mountain should be picking up light, but it's not, because it's such an artificial light. And then the shadows are so dark that it kind of clues you in a way that there's something big, very large, and very bright behind me. And so then I hope that people kind of look then at the title and are able to piece together what they're looking at. And they're generally large photographs that are printed. And it is a bit of a lure of beauty. That's what I want, you know, to tell this story, is I want to lure people in and then really have them sit and think about what we're doing in our country.
So I know you're still collecting a lot of these photos. Are there any plans for you to take them on the road as a traveling exhibition? What are your ultimate plans for this collection of photos?
That is always my ultimate goal, is to have exhibitions. So this the work finally opens for its very first time, and it is what I have, which is about 15 full, beautiful photographs at Auburn University. And so that's the ultimate goal, is to have exhibitions that really touch people and that people can see, you know, these beautiful images, but also really think about and spread the word of what's happening at our border and what's happening to people really seeking asylum in our country.
We were talking about, you know, sort of the disruptions of the light pollution. And I think what a lot of people might not realize also is that these lights that you're talking about, these are lights that are on 24/7 at night. Detainees who are living in these often camps or detention centers, they are having their normal circadian rhythms disrupted by this constant light. Have you heard from anybody living in these towns who are sort of experiencing that same thing?
I actually haven't talked to many, but I photographed a number of places where people live in the background, the backyards of these detention centers, and I don't know how they function and how they live. And we should say that these lights, you know, as I said, it's kind of layers. These lights, high power LEDs, are only about 10 to 15 years old. And so they came about at the pinnacle of when we were building these detention centers, starting, you know, in the Obama era. We started building these large private ICE detention centers. And so they've kind of grown up side by side. And if you look at lights, you'll often be in a facility where there's another facility next to the ICE center, and those have the old vapor lights, and they're not as bright. These new LEDs are invading our world in a sense. But I have not spoken with someone, and I'd be curious. I'm always looking. Please reach out, ever.
Well, it's interesting because some of these photos, some of these detention facilities have since shut down as we speak now. But as we are seeing now, detentions are starting to pick up. Arrests are being made. The Trump administration has a goal of arresting so many immigrants in a year. But are you starting to see maybe more sites added to your to-do list or to-see list?
There aren't that many that have been added. We've seen ones close, and I think we're about to see them reopen. So the one you speak of in Texas, the Family Residential Center, the kindest word for, you know, a family prison, closed about 2 years ago. But everything also we have to remember is kept under the guise of Homeland Security. So it's very hard sometimes to get some of this data on when it's reopening and what's happening there.
How much longer do you see this project continuing before you decide to wrap it up?
I'm hoping to do one giant trip to Texas in the middle. In the coming years, I need one more big grant to really do that push, which will probably get me about 10 to 12 new centers. And then I'll cap the project out. I'll be about 80%, you know, and then I'll kind of photograph when I make it to other centers. But the goal is to really kind of finish this out. And I really set the goal of the detention centers looking at when Biden came out of office and Trump started. That's the point where I've looked at, pinpointed the detention centers. So new ones opening, one new one just opened by me, but their capacity is really small. It's three. I photographed it the other day and just looked at the numbers this morning and was like, oh, that's a very small center. So really what they're opening are not so much the larger in the privatized realm. It takes a few years to get some of those.
What is sort of the next project that you have in your sights? Because I know everybody who is wrapping something up, you've got something new that you'd like to look at.
What's your next thing? And I'll say the more I looked at this project and went deeper and have been speaking on this project, and I speak to a lot of students about it, the more I realize that, you know, some of this for me has been tied directly to what happened after the Holocaust. I'm a Jewish, middle-aged Jewish woman. And a lot of, you know, we are always saying, not again, not again. And yet, so I look at detention centers as the same thing. We're turning people away from asylum in our country. So I don't exactly know what it's going to be, but I believe I'm going to start going again to rural America. And I'm going to be looking at I'm looking at small town productions of Anne Frank. I have no idea what's going on with them, but that's the next goal. And to me, it has this link of kind of, we call it in the Jewish religion, calls it tikkun olam, which is to heal the world or save the world. And that should be our goal in my mind, to kind of point out what's happening in the world right now.
Marnie Schindelman is a professor of photography and expanded media at the University of Georgia. Her work is influenced by the data tracks we leave behind and to capture that ephemera through visual media. Schindelman is part of the collaborative team Larson and Schindelman. Schindelman's current project is called Restore the Night Sky. See images from the collection at tpr.org. You've been listening to Fronteras. Fronteras editors are Dan Katz and Yvette Benavides. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Thanks for listening.